Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, January 13th, 2025. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips. People who are joining through phone calls, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can press *9, and that will virtually raise or lower your virtual hands. Everybody who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon, the mute icon, that will mute or unmute yourselves. And if you click on the raise hand icon, that raises and lowers your virtual hands. If people are able to utilize these tools, it's helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. I do request everyone to please keep yourselves on mute unless speaking, because it helps eliminate any external noise. As you know, that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, we request that we have one speaker at a time so that they can do their job well. I also request people to state your name before you start making your comments, because it's helpful for the interpreters. It's helpful for people who are listening on the phone calls. And when people listen to the meeting audio, it's helpful for them to know who the speakers were at the time. As a general practice, we request speakers to describe themselves briefly when they speak initially. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian. I've got a gray sweater on today and I wear reading glasses and I have long dark hair. When we go to public comments, I just want to remind any members of the public that if you would like to make any public comments, either you can raise your virtual hands at the time when we begin the public comment section, or if you're able to send me a chat message, please do so. This will inform me how many members of the public we have to speak during the time, and we can take everybody in the order received. Chair Calabia, I can go ahead and read the agenda out loud, and then I can take the roll call of the committee members if you concur.
Yes.
Okay. So before I start reading the agenda, I would like to share my screen so that it's visible to people. Can see it. And when it's visible, if somebody can confirm for me, I would appreciate that.
Yes, I can see it.
Great. Thank you so much. So as I said, after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through AAC roll call. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We are delighted to have Ifan Ipanti. He is the Chief of Transit Planning and Innovation from Prince George's County to share information about PG County's Transit Vision Plan. We also have Department of Transportation from the district to give us an update and complete their presentation from last month about accessibility and bus priority. And we will have David Van Dusen to give us that presentation. We have some customer experience improvements coming within WMATA, and Teddy Krolik will be here to discuss those. At 5:45, we will go to public comment section and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. And when I call out the names of the AAC members, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster.
I'm here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you.
An 89-year-old Filipino-American with a blue shirt on.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
I'm here. I got on a blue shirt. Go ahead. Get on my work shirt.
Okay, thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher?
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein? Steve Caffin?
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum? Philippa Mazzell? Sandy Newsom?
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner?
Present, 80 years old with a black hoodie over a red jumper.
Thank you. Sarah Rod?
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray? Denise Rush? Ms. Rush has informed us that she may not be able to attend some of the meetings. Paul Samford? Patrick Sheehan?
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simoneau? And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. Chair Calabi, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes. Do you want to have us approve the agenda now?
Yes, please.
All in favor of the agenda, please say aye.
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 Hearing no opposition.
Audio now in mute alert.
The agenda is now adopted. With regards to the minutes of the last meeting, we highlighted them last Monday. And unless there's some objection to the minutes that you have received and that were highlighted last Monday, can I call for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No objections. The minutes are approved. Let's proceed now with the agenda anew.
Okay, thank you, Chair Calabia. Now, I'm delighted to ask Ifan Ipanti from Prince George's County to talk about what he would like to discuss the transit vision plan from PG County. Mr. Ipanti?
Great, thank you very much. I'm Ifan Ipanti. I'm wearing the blue shirt here overall, so whatever. I'm excited to update this committee on what Prince George's County is doing regarding our transit development plan, which we call the Transit Vision Plan. As required by the state of Maryland, we're required to update our transit vision plan every 5 years. Our transit vision plan is our policy. It helps guide policy, short-term policy, and transit implementation in the county for 5 years. It's usually an unconstrained plan, which means that we try to think about all the good ideas, about all the things that we need to do in the county to improve transit, improve accessibility, and also to address issues in terms of gaps of service or reliability of service. We started working on a transit vision plan about 2 years ago, about the same time when WMATA started working on the Better Bus Network redesign plan. And we've been coordinating with WMATA a lot, so that we sync and coordinate our services in the county with the Metro Bus team, as well as Metro Rail services, so that we can improve accessibility throughout the county. Of particular importance to the county is to ensure that our transit vision plan addresses about seven key priorities for the county. We wanted to make sure that the plan addressed issues of sustainability and equity. It addressed issues of safety, reliability, user friendliness, and wanted to also make sure that the plan was community-centric and innovative. So these are some of the key themes that the Transit Vision Plan addressed, the things that we looked at to ensure that we're meeting the needs and expectations of our community and our riders. Accessibility is something that we've really focused on as a system, a local system, to make sure that we provide the right type of neighborhood services in the county that connects people to opportunities. We've also reached out to the community to really understand their needs, understand the challenges with current transit services in the county, and then try to really work on addressing existing needs, and then how do we move from there into the future. So those are some of the important things that we've been doing in terms of our outreach, in terms of the surveys that we've done, but also in terms of our coordination with the WMATA team. I'll just have to mention here that Metrobus provides a lot of service in the county. About 70 to 75% of transit service in the county is provided by Metrobus. So you can see why our coordination with the WMATA team, the Metrobus team, is very paramount in terms of providing reliable and safe transit services in the county. But as a local system, we also want to attract new riders. We think that there's quite a lot of opportunities for us to grow. There've been quite a lot of new development in the county, a lot of housing development, especially connecting seniors, people with disabilities, and other communities that have traditionally faced some gaps in terms of mobility, really making sure that we provide an avenue for them to be able to access opportunity. So these are the kind of things that the Transit Vision Plan we've really worked hard to provide or to articulate. The next big area of our Transit Vision Plan has really been focusing on sustainability. And we've been looking at opportunities where we could transition our bus fleet from diesel to zero emissions to meet up with the regional climate action plan, but the county's action, the climate action plan as well. And because of the work that we've done, we really have some projects that this plan is really looking at in terms of how do we approach sustainability as a system. In addition to that, we're looking at capacity building. Again, as a small system, we have some constraints. So how do we build capacity so that we can meet existing needs? We recognize that we're not everywhere, we're not where we're supposed to be in the county. So we're thinking about accessibility, but we're also thinking about expanding our capacity to deliver the service that we're working on. So we're leveraging new transit investments. We're also leveraging how do we expand our regional network, our local network, and link that up to the regional network. Some of the high level findings of our Transit Vision Plan has been, again, from our surveys and the things that we've heard from our riders and travelers, people have asked for more direct routes so that they can connect easily to their areas of opportunities. Folks have asked for increased frequency for local transit, especially on the weekends and evening services. The customers are asking for bus priority in terms of ensuring that the buses are quick, they're fast, they're reliable. And this is something, again, that we've been working with the WMATA team on a few, on increasing frequency and priority for buses. Improved community connectivity is a key area that the plan also focuses on. And then also looking at bus stop balancing. There's some routes where we have excessive number of bus stops, and some of the bus stops, sometimes we have bus stops where we go for a couple of weeks without anybody person boarding. So we're looking at opportunities to streamline and ensure that we're thinking about our facilities. And again, coordinating with WMATA and other regional providers and local providers. A big area of opportunity for our transit vision plan has really been the unmet transit needs in the county. As I mentioned previously, we've reached out to community to ask them, how do you want us to provide service to you? How can we meet your needs? And we've heard loud and clear about what people want, how they want us to think outside of the box to provide flexibility in terms of meeting travel needs. And that is something that we've taken. We've worked on microtransit accessibility in the county, where, as part of our transit vision plan, we will be expanding microtransit in the county so that we meet specific needs of specific communities in terms of their mobility needs. Proper coordination to ensure safety is something that is also paramount. So we've been working with our Vision Zero team to ensure that our transit system is safe, our bus stops are safe, we have the type of lighting that we need. And so all of these things are the things that we've worked with our community to develop and include in our transit vision plan. Let me talk a little bit about the timeline of the transit vision plan. We've done the discovery phases of the plan. We did that from spring 2023 to summer 2023. And then we went into a visioning phase of the plan where we met with different communities, homeowner associations. We did a lot of pop-ups, ride-alongs. We worked with our jurisdictional partners. We had a big jurisdictional coordination meeting with all jurisdictions in Prince George's County were invited to come and share their inputs. And then we worked with our frontline employees, the drivers, our contracted vendors, to kind of hear from them some of the challenges and opportunities on how we can implement and improve the system. And then after that, we worked on what we call the documentation phase, which is really doing a lot of the analysis, cataloging this information, coordinating with WMATA in terms of the Better Bus Network, defining what WMATA is going to operate, what the bus is going to operate, and then doing our Title VI and all the related analysis to help us come up with our recommendation. We've been working on this phase. We've done our first draft recommendations. We've provided that to our stakeholders. They've provided information and inputs. We've gone back, we're refining the recommendations to make sure that we've addressed the suggestions and the feedback from our stakeholders. And then after this, we're going to do some community engagement. And part of what I'm doing again is a community engagement so that folks who do not know about what we've done, we'll have that opportunity to provide information to them, get their feedback, and help in terms of coming up with the final recommendations. And then later in the spring of this year, we'll come up with our draft final report, which we will share with the state and our key stakeholders. And that's how the process works and how the timeline for the transit vision plan. That's the timeline for the transit vision plan. I just also want to highlight what we've done with our key stakeholders on developing the transit vision plan. We've worked quite a lot as a team with the WMATA Better Bus Network redesign team. So, as part of our transit vision plan, our starting point is the Better Bus Network redesign, year one implementation, which is going to be implemented in July, I mean, July 1st of this year. So we did quite a lot of work with the WMATA team to make sure that, areas of opportunities and gaps were defined. The route that WMATA is going to be operating, were defined and the routes that the county will operate is defined. So that was our starting point. We have an aspirational network, which is a network that we also work with WMATA on as in terms of how we're going to expand service over the next couple of years. So we all know that the purple line is going to be operational soon. So we've worked on the aspirational network. What are the opportunities for us to retool service and annual services? It is in that aspirational plan, which we'll work with WMATA on. We also know in the county has really focused on transit-oriented development. And so as some of this development come online, we have some ideas on the type of plan that we know we're gonna implement in certain areas to address mobility needs. And then the FBI relocation or the headquarters relocation in Greenbelt, we've also come up with a plan, which is part of our aspirational network, where we're gonna address those type of mobility needs for a lot of folks traveling in and out of the FBI headquarters. So those are the things that the Transit Vision Plan helps define. We've also, there's some things that as part of the Transit Vision Plan, some of the findings were like things we could not wait on, such as having like a customer experience team. We recognized that earlier on that it was a critical need for the county to meet the needs of our stakeholders and riders. We went in and started a new customer experience team, whose job was really engage customers, work with, especially on the paratransit side, where we had our color bus service to really engage with our customers and help them in terms of navigating the system and addressing some of their needs. I will stop. I don't know if there's any question pertaining to this plan, but I think that's an overview of where we are at this time.
Yes, Evan, I chair the bus rail subcommittee, and one of my vice chairs has been heading up this effort, looking at the plans of Prince George's County. Her name is Sandy Neuville. In August, we met with state officials, that is a state senator and the office of a state delegate. And we tried to ascertain from them what's happening. Maybe some of what you've talked about is something that we had hoped to learn from them. In the meanwhile, since August, a number of us have been trying to see where the bus, that is the system operated by Prince George's County, has been going or is planned to go. And it's been really tough. Now, we're on the outside. We've tried to talk to people from Prince George's County and we're unable to learn much. So I personally, on behalf of the committee, looked at online information, the latest online information. And the latest online information started with a document back in 2018 that went up to 2023. And I still poked around and poked around and couldn't find much more recent. I did find some maps, but it wasn't clear whether the maps were existing bus routes or planned bus routes, so it wasn't that helpful. Still stumbling around, even last night, I found a document from June 11, 2019. It was a document signed by the Director of Public Works and Transportation. His name is Terry Bellamy. Are you Mr. Bellamy's replacement?
No, I am not Mr. Bellamy's replacement.
Okay.
Mr. Bellamy's replacement is Mr. Michael Johnson.
Okay. Well, anyway, in this 2019 document, the most recent that I could find with any specifics, Mr. Bellamy wrote to a bus transportation project of WMATA at that time that, let me see if I can find the wording. He states, the quote, "The county has and continues to believe that additional metro bus service is needed throughout the country, county, especially south of Fort Washington and Clinton." Those specific communities were the first that we learned about, and I only saw it from last night from a 2019 document of the Prince George's County. On the other hand, our vice chair, Denise Rush, who unfortunately has not been able to be with us for the past several weeks, she's been just talking about bus deserts in Prince George's County. She's done so for many months, and that's why we began this project. We wonder, well, let me, I just, if I can, if my notes are accurate, I think you said we're not everywhere we need to be. That's probably the case with most jurisdictions that have bus services, but you said it, and in the context that I've just given you, we're trying to find out where exactly the bus deserts that Denise Rush has been talking about are and how they should be served. Now, let me mention that Sandy Neusel, who has been heading up the project, listed some questions that were points of discussion that we hope to hear from a colleague of yours, Victor. So if I could turn to Sandy, given what Efan has said and what you asked of Victor, could you mention a couple of points that we're looking into?
Hi, this is Sandy Neusel, a senior Caucasian with gray turning white hair and wearing a blue sweater. Thank you so much, Mr. Aponte, for this presentation. Victor Weisberg did speak to us, I think it was November, it might have been December, and said that we would be hearing about this draft vision plan in early 2025. So thank you very much for your presentation today. I don't want to grill you too much, and it's possible that Victor Weisberg may be able to speak to us in February, but in the transit vision plan, would there be a map that shows the changes in bus routes to expand bus coverage, perhaps in Prince George's County? It's very difficult to find maps that are easy to read that show all bus routes. And you've already said that WMATA provides about 75% of the bus service in Prince George's County. So we should turn to WMATA to ask them for a bus route for Prince George's County. But in your transit vision plan, is there going to be a map that shows where the planned, the bus routes would be covering? And I realize that Prince George's County is a large county with a odd geographic shape. So the majority of the population and perhaps the majority of the bus service needed would be, as you mentioned, up towards where the Purple Line will be and where the new FBI headquarters will be. But the southern part of the county is also important. So let me just stop talking and ask, will there be a map that shows the bus coverage in Prince George's County?
Yes, there will be maps that will show where the bus is today and where we're planning to expand the bus services.
Excellent.
So we'll have that And just going back to the southern part of the county, we also recognize that the southern part of the county does not have as much bus service as we would like it to be. And there are also plans for that. I may have mentioned that we're thinking about other ways to meet the needs of folks. We're thinking about microtransit, which may be a good way to meet the needs of transit in the southern part of the county. So we have a plan for that. We have a microtransit implementation plan, which we've prepared as part of the Transit Vision plan, where we're going to roll out microtransit to meet some of the specific needs of our riders and residents in the southern part of the county.
Is
that
Okay.
final?
Okay. And can I ask a sort of a follow-on? It may be premature, but Victor Weisberg suggested that we, the Accessibility Advisory Committee, would be allowed to see the draft 2025 vision plan. And I just want to weigh in that yes, we would still like to see the draft if we're considered one of your jurisdictional partners, which I think we would be as being, advisory to WMATA. So I hope that that will be possible soon. And if you can't commit to that with a firm answer now, I understand that, but I just want to put it on the table that we still would be very interested in seeing a draft plan.
Yes, when the plan is released, as we write it up, we will definitely share the plan with the committee so that you guys, the committee can take a look at it and provide comments as need be. So we'll share details as we proceed.
Thank you very much.
Hands up for other comments or questions from the committee.
I have my hand up, Tina. This is
Okay.
Pat.
Yes, Pat.
And Sandy, thank you for asking my question. I was first of all, I want to say thank you for the introduction of this plan. And I think that if I'm reading tea leaves correctly, that rather than go through the specifics of what we have here or whatever, I think that's more appropriate for us to wait until the draft plan is out. I would think that the first reporting requirement would be back to the state and then to the partners. So us asking specific questions here, I'm not sure how, not the word appropriate, but how right that would be. Don, am I, Mr. Drummer, am I reading this correctly? We should first get accepted by the state and then come back to us with the draft plan, later in the spring.
I'm not sure about the state piece, but I will say that I think your approach is most prudent, because it will give them an opportunity to
Exactly.
get some details, and
Right.
if they come back to you, it will be legitimate, not just shooting from the hip.
Right. I just wanted to make sure this is great news. I'm extremely pleased to get this first preliminary look, but I think that's appropriate, which is about what you just said, right, Sandy?
I think so.
Agree.
That
No, thank you. Thank you for that report, and I think that would be appropriate, Tino, to for the committee to be able to wait for the draft report when it's released in the spring.
In any event, why should it be so easy to find such data and maps and plans online from Montgomery County, which will be implementing their plan in a few months or sometime this year? Why is it possible to look online and find valuable data from Montgomery County and even from neighboring Fairfax County, Fairfax County neighbors, Prince George, and why isn't such data already online, whether it's to be implemented immediately or later, but it ought to be online so that people can see it and comment now.
So, Tino, this is Sandy. Can I just jump in? I think In all fairness, Montgomery County might be in a sort of a different 5-year cycle. They may be in a different part of their process of doing their transit vision plan than Prince George's County. And I was searching around for stuff for Fairfax County, and I, you know, it isn't all sewed up and nice and neat and tidy there either. Oh. So, you know, there Prince George's County is, you know, working through their transit vision plan. So let's be a little bit patient here would be my suggestion. And I hope I haven't overstepped by saying that, but that, you know, that just seems to be, you know, in fairness, not every county is working in the same calendar cycle.
In fairness, some of these problems have been persisting for years. We should at least see some of the plans, the maps that are where services are being planned, or where, for example, Tarek Bellamy said that there are needs, especially south of Fort Washington and Clinton. And if there were those needs back in 2019, what's been done since 2019 to cover them? I hate to be impatient. You know, I'm an advocate. I'm an advocate. And sometimes jurisdictions need to get here from advocates, as maybe you hear from me. I'll be patient. I have no option but to wait. But I want to be an advocate so that we get things done now. We've been waiting since the materials we saw in 2018. Give me a break.
So let me just jump in here, Tino, just to add a little bit more information that I have. I'm working with a bus with the DMV Moves, with the DMV Moves project. And part of that project also deals with bus prioritization as it deals with bus rapid transit. And, you know, in the ratings that I just put forward, one of my conclusions was my emphasis for bus projects, for bus rapid transit, and, you know, more as much bus service as possible will be towards Prince George's County. So you have a couple of other things. You know, this is one piece of the puzzle. DMV Moves, I believe, is another piece of the puzzle. The Better Bus Network is a third piece of the puzzle. So I think that that's important. The other thing that I was also told on the DMV, I mean, within the DMV Moves project, is that getting data from the local, let's see, local jurisdictional level to be equivalent between the different jurisdictions is really hard because everyone measures data differently. So, for instance, what we saw at the AAC meeting with Jordan Holt is beautiful data. I mean, it's WMATA wide and it's just wonderful. Getting the data to be reported correctly, to be reported consistently between the local jurisdictions, the state jurisdictions, and all of that, so that regionally we are looking at the same data with the same definitions and all of that, is going to take some time. And I absolutely agree that that is going to be one way we can get the maps, the data, the level of accessibility, you know, and all those measurements consistent between the jurisdictions. I think we need to be consistent with it. We need to push where we can with it and encourage, I think, the jurisdictions, particularly to WMATA, as much as they can help us to make sure that we get that information. And then we make decisions or at least value adjustments based on data and make good data-driven decisions going forward. So,
thanks, yeah. Pat. Both you and I are Montgomery County residents. I don't want to sound chauvinistic, but I think I will share what I found easily online with all of you, including Don, including Efan, and you will see how much you can learn even before things get implemented, even if things are still in process. And nothing is perfect. Nothing is perfect. I don't expect them to be. But I saw data and information, including performance measures, which led to changes, budget items. I saw that on Montgomery County's online website. So I will share it with Don and with Efan, so they'll see what I'm talking about. This is, okay, enough said from this advocate.
Okay, Chair Calabia, this is anew. Mr. Drummer has been trying to say something. He raised his hand. Mr. Drummer, please go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to point out, Tino, I thank you for offering that, because you're right. I only have a few years of experience with relationships with Prince George's County, and I don't have deep relationships. Ifan certainly has some, and he also understands the WMATA piece. I want to applaud the AAC first and foremost for thoughtful approaches. Sandy, you sound like a transportation engineer in your approach, and I think that's important. Tino, you sound like a person who says, I need a common sense approach to these things. And when I have solutions that are laid out there, we ought to at least consider why they are so successful in Montgomery County. I think you're right on target. My approach has been one from the very beginning. I don't have a clear picture in Prince George's County of requirements, capabilities, gaps, what the planning is and what the way ahead is. And I will tell you, based on my exposure in Prince George's County and the DPWT staff, there's some talent and some brilliance and some focus that I didn't know was there before. But it is there and they're working hard. Now it's a matter of how do we pull that out and get it on the table in DMV moves, in the Better Bus Network, in the Transit Vision Plan, so that in the next year or so, we get the most out of it and not just talk about it. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think we have a great opportunity. Tino, I would continue to press where you're pressing. Sandy, thank you for the thoughtful approach as we move through this, and for the AAC as a whole, the respectful approach and building a relationship with Prince George's County. And I'll say this, not to throw rocks, but Prince George's County hasn't been responsive to the AAC most recently. And today, Ifan, thank you very much for stepping up. As late as noon today, this presentation wouldn't have taken place. This can was getting ready to be kicked down the road to February or March, and that was unacceptable. And he has stepped up to the table and says, no, we will make the presentation today. And Ifan has done that. And he knows what he's talking about. And we will continue to press forward and see if we can improve that relationship. And more importantly, improve what's happening inside of Prince George's County DPWNT. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being instrumental in getting this coordinated. The AAC really appreciates that. And Chair Calabia, I know we are coming up at the time. Sarah Roth had raised her hand. If we can just take a minute and take her comment as the last before we wrap up this section. Sarah, go ahead.
Thank you. Hopefully it's a very quick question. I heard the term, I believe it was microtransit, used a couple of times. And I just wasn't sure exactly what that meant. That's all.
Thank you.
Okay, great, Sarah. So microtransit, the way I would define it is that it's an alternative demand response system within a defined geographic boundaries. So that's how I'm defining it. So for example, in the southern part of the county, we currently have a microtransit system where we have about 2 to 3 buses around the Oxon Hill, Fort Washington area. So it covers about 3 or 4 census zones. And we provide transit within that zone. The vehicles do not move out of the zone. The vehicles are within the zone. So we try to meet the needs of our residents within the zone Either they're going for shopping or they're commuting to a metro station or a metro bus stop, but it is within a particular defined zone.
Thank Great,
you.
thank you.
Pat, I see you raised your hand. Did you have any additional comments? Patrick? Okay, I guess not.
I'm good. I'm good. I knew it. Just forgot to lower my hand. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So, Ifan, just like Mr. Drummer said, thank you so much for coming today. Chair Calabia, we are at the time for the next section. Did you have any last comments before we go to the next section, or we're good?
No, but I was a kind of a child advocate of the 60s. And I remain an advocate. Judy Heumann was one of our nation's best advocates for people with disabilities. And I will send you materials, all of you, reminding you what a tiger she was to get things done. Same thing with Hettinger. He brought WMATA to court in order to get elevators in the metro system to court. The metro system wasn't planned to have elevators, but Hettinger, a tremendous advocate, Judy Heumann, a national advocate, those are the kind of people that inspire me. And maybe it'll help things get along faster. In short, I will send also what I found by Montgomery County, which may show that it's possible to share things or to do things quickly and to share them publicly. Thank you. Let's go on to the next item.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Ifan, thank you so much again for coming to the AAC. And Mr. Drummer, thank you. Truly appreciate all your efforts. All right. So next we have the Department of Transportation from District, and we have David Van Dusen to talk about the accessibility and bus priority. So David, whenever you're ready, if you would. There we go. Okay, perfect.
Excellent. Yeah. Hi, everyone. And just want to confirm that the presentation is displayed right now.
It is, yes.
Okay,
Thank you.
perfect. All right. Hi, everyone. My name is David Van Dusen, and I have brown wavy hair. I'm wearing glasses right now. I have a gray sweater on, just to keep me warm. And I was here last month with my colleague Jamie Carrington. We had a really great discussion about the bus islands and shared stops here in the district. But we missed out on a lot of other pieces that we wanted to update this committee on. And so I am back again. Thanks for having me. And that's what I'm planning on talking through today is some of the other pieces that we've been doing, give you a preview of a couple of projects that we have coming up that we're excited for. And yeah, I think we'll go from there. So just to kind of reiterate a few things, how we look at things for accessibility and bus priority in DC, we're really focused on kind of two different parts. One is maximizing access to opportunity via transit. We know that people with disabilities are twice as likely to be living in a zero-car household, and that slow and unreliable buses are really depriving people of access to those basic needs. And so we really want to find ways to make sure that we're maximizing access to transit and that transit is efficient and works for people to get you where you need to be. The other thing we're really focused on is ensuring access to quality transit. And that includes things like safe sidewalks and crossings, trying to minimize conflicts with other modes, just generally focusing on bus stops and accessibility at the bus stops. And we have an image on the slide here which shows one of our bus bulb outs or curb extensions. There's kind of interchangeable terms we use, where the sidewalk is actually extended out into the travel lane, which allows buses to pull directly up to that platform and have more level boardings for folks. In the background in this picture, you can actually see a ramp deployed from the bus, and someone in a mobility device is coming off that bus using that platform. I also just want to quickly acknowledge we had a pretty big snow event last week. And so one of the things that this really needs to include is making sure there's safe sidewalks and crossings, both at our bus stops as well as at our crosswalks. I'm sure there will be more about that today. And in general, I ride the bus every single day. I don't think we did a great job. We did, of course, have a lot of snow this time, but I hope you've all been getting around okay. I know that my bus stop in particular is not currently accessible right now, so definitely something we need to keep working on. Some other issues that we see, these are, kind of the typical issues at our bus stops. Buses needing to get to that curb access for accessible boarding. And what we have in the pictures there are buses that are unable to reach the curb, usually because someone is illegally parking in a bus zone or the bus stops aren't the right size. And so buses can't actually get into those spaces and get to the curb. The three images that we have, one is on 8th Street Southeast down in Barracks Row, where one of our circulator buses was unable to get to the curb. And so you actually see people boarding in the street. There's a ramp deployed in the street right now. We have a couple pictures from 8th Street right around Chinatown, where there's a bus that's unable to get to a curb because of a large like commercial freight truck is parked right at the bus stop. And someone there with a mobility device hopefully was not trying to get on this bus, but probably couldn't if they were trying to. And then our third image are just a whole bunch of cars parked in a bus stop where people are just getting off the bus into the street, trying to get around those cars. And so those are all things we're really trying to address with our projects, in addition to just kind of helping with bus service and reliability. So some of the things that we've done to improve bus stop accessibility, the things we continue to do. I talked a little bit about those curb extensions at bus stops. Again, we sometimes use the term bus bulb outs there, which I kind of mentioned are really trying to make sure that buses can reach the curb. Hopefully, that's easier boarding and alighting for folks. It also helps, though, on delay for buses because they don't have to merge out of traffic to get to the curb and then back into traffic. They can just stay right in lane. And it also provides some more sidewalk space, waiting space for folks. And both of our images that I have on this slide are showing people using those bump outs, those bulb outs. In one case, we have, again, a ramp deployed, so someone is using their mobility device to get on. And another folks are just boarding the bus from that bulb out. But other things that we also do, we look to try to relocate bus stops to the far side of an intersection. A lot of times that really discourages people from parking in that space because the bus can, move through the intersection and pull into that bus stop on the far side. That also helps a lot with bus delays. They don't get stuck at as many red lights. We've been focused a lot on making sure bus zones are the appropriate size for whatever bus service is on our corridors. So a lot of times that means adjusting parking along corridors to make sure that there's enough space for a bus to get in and out of a bus stop. We've experimented with outlining bus zones with actual paint. So it kind of looks like a little parking square that says bus only in it. We employed those on 8th Street Northeast. And one of our planners did go kind of observe before and after and look at a little bit about once we put in these striped bus zones, and there is better compliance, right? People keep those bus stops clear when we have those outlined. So that's another thing that we continue to explore. And then we also have been doing enforcement measures. So clear lanes, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about here shortly, is one of the ways that we do enforcement. That's the automated camera enforcement on Metro buses. And then we've also used traffic control officers or TCOs at different places to help with enforcement. I know in particular we use that in Columbia Heights where we have our bus lanes just to kind of move people along who might be stopping in the bus lane. Sometimes writing tickets, it depends on the situation, but a lot of times it's just kind of keeping things clear and the buses moving. We did talk a lot last time about our shared stops and islands, and that again is another way that we help with accessibility. So we have been building different shared stops and islands throughout the district, particularly in places where we are putting in protected bike lanes. Protected bike lanes have been, proven to have a safety benefit for everyone on the road, not just people riding bikes, by, providing, more clear space for people to know where they're supposed to go. It does obviously introduce new conflict for folks boarding or exiting a bus, right? You have to cross a bike lane to actually do that. But that is something that we've really tried to employ with our designs. And I have a picture here of one of our shared stops where there's a person on a scooter who stopped waiting for people boarding and exiting a bus. And then I also wanted to point out, we've done quite a bit of education and outreach around these shared stops. This is something that I've personally been involved in, where we've at this point spent over 220 staff hours at 44, at least 44 unique bus stops that either have a bus island or shared stop configuration. And what we've been doing there is trying to do direct outreach to bus riders, to people riding bikes, and then just doing observations of how the space is being used. So I have an image here of a stop for bus riders sign that we've put out at any new installation, which is from the perspective of a person riding a bike coming into one of these shared stops. There's a bus off to the left that's, the doors are open and somebody is walking out the back door. Looks like she's probably texting or on her phone. Just trying to, let people on bikes know that as you're entering the space, you really need to be looking out for the folks who are entering or exiting a bus there. I also want to mention that I am working on a report right now that's compiling those observations. A couple of my colleagues are helping me out with this. It'd definitely be something we'd share with this committee when it's complete. Very much just drafting it right now, trying to compile all the things that we've seen, which includes things like different design elements and ways that impacts people's behavior at these stops. So definitely be on the lookout for that. It's something that we think can help guide a lot of different, information for anyone who's doing this kind of work. Some of the other things we've been focused on, back to Clear Lanes. I mentioned this is the program that we have that's a joint initiative between DDOT and WMATA, where we've actually mounted cameras on Metro buses that are using AI technology to identify anyone who's illegally parked in a bus stop or illegally parked or stopped in a bus lane. And so what you see there, I've got a couple images. One is actually a video, so it's got a big play button in the middle of it that's blocking the image, but that is a YouTube video that you could view or listen to on YouTube that shows instances where the cameras have actually recorded people, blocking a bus stop or blocking a bus lane. And the bottom image shows a bus that is unable to reach the curb with someone who has a mobility device. Again, just showing someone who's parked in that bus stop. What this technology is doing, it is identifying folks that are parked or blocking the bus lanes, and it's sending out $100 tickets. These are being reviewed by humans, so it's not just kind of going out to every person that gets caught. But these are things that we're really trying to drive behavior change versus just kind of collecting the ticket. And these have been going on. Bus stops went into effect late in 2023. Bus zones, it's almost been a full year. Excuse me, bus lanes. It's almost been a full year since those have been in effect. So we're still kind of sorting through the data at this point. But we do have some preliminary findings between September 2023 and September 2024. The average weekly bus stop tickets, so that's finding someone who is actually parked at a bus stop, those number of tickets have decreased by 27%, which is the kind of behavior that we want to see, right? People start to learn, I'm not supposed to park in a bus stop. I shouldn't be stopping in a bus lane. And they find other places to do that activity. And what that does is keep the bus stops clear, make sure that those bus lanes are clear, so that buses are staying on time, they're staying reliable, and are able to reach the curb when they need to. We heard a little bit about the Better Bus Network redesign. We are absolutely working with WMATA on that as well. And so how we've been really focused on that, we have lots of different infrastructure changes, right? Anytime we change a bus stop route, we need to be thinking about where there are new sidewalk landing pads at those stops, updating the signage to make sure we've got Metro bus zone signs, coordinating with that Clear Lanes program so that those are enforceable. At any places where maybe a stop is closing or a route is changing and there was a bus shelter, we want to make sure that we've coordinated those bus shelter moves with those stop changes. We've been working with our upcoming projects that are not just on bus priority to confirm that those changes are happening. And then we're also evaluating our bus priority network just to confirm that we're still focused on the right corridors, that we're still focused on the right priority of those corridors. And, you know, in general, just kind of refreshing our plan to make sure we're still doing what we should be doing. And then my last couple of slides are really focused on a couple of featured projects. These aren't the only projects that we have coming up, but these are three that are either getting close to construction or getting close to design that you know, we wanted to share with this committee. And so those three are H Street Northeast. So that's the H Street corridor where the streetcar is. We have 8th Street Southeast, which is Barracks Row, and Georgia Ave, pretty much the entire Georgia Avenue from Howard University to the Maryland border. And so I'll go into a little more detail on each of those here. So the first one is H Street Northeast. Again, this is where the streetcar is located, the H Street corridor. The H Street Bridge is a separate project there at Union Station. So this starts just kind of to the west of that to the east of that at 3rd Street Northeast and extends over to the Starburst intersection at Benning Road. The main part that we're looking at on this project is to install 2 miles of transit only lanes. So those would be in the place where the streetcar tracks are and would be dedicated space just for the streetcar and for buses to use. We're working on new bus bulb outs at 8 different locations. So again, that's that place where we're extending out the curb so the bus can stay in lane and service that bus stop, giving some more waiting space for folks as well. We are looking at new signalized mid-block crossings. So there are several places on H Street where the blocks are long. They're very long blocks, and people tend to cross in the middle because it's more convenient. This usually happens if you're familiar with where the Whole Foods is on H Street. That block in particular has a lot of folks crossing right in the mid-block. And so we are planning on putting in new signalized crossings so you could actually push a button to call for a signal to have a safe crossing there, as well as in a couple different locations. And in general, just looking at safety improvements at each of the intersections typically involved, you know, something like pushing back the parking from those intersections so that they're, as a pedestrian, you're more visible on those corners. And if you're interested in viewing more of this, you know, we have a lot more information on our website of kind of how this project has progressed. We're definitely hoping for construction this year. There still are some things we've got to work out with, particularly around streetcar. But that is the intended plans right now. Barracks Row, 8th Street Southeast. This one actually goes from East Capitol Street down to M Street Southeast. So right through the heart of Barracks Row by the Eastern Market Metro Station. This one doesn't have bus lanes the full length of that corridor, but we are proposing some south of Pennsylvania Avenue to help move buses through that part of the corridor. So it's about a half a mile of bus lanes. We're also looking at doing bus bulb outs at several different locations here. But I think one of the bigger pieces on here on this project is looking at pedestrian refuge islands. So these are places where I have an image. The street itself is actually divided with a concrete island in between the lanes. And so as a pedestrian, you have a place to stop and wait to make the full crossing. So it makes crossings a little bit shorter for folks. And these are specifically targeted around the Eastern Market Metro Station. So if you're familiar with that area, particularly Pennsylvania Avenue and 8th Street, there's just a lot of different crossings, and trying to make that a little bit safer for folks is one of the big goals on this project. And then my last slide is really talking about Georgia Avenue Northwest. This one is hasn't gone to design yet, so it's still a little ways off. But this one, again, extends from Berry Place, which is where the current bus lanes end at Howard University, And looking to extend those bus lanes the entire length of Georgia up to Eastern Avenue at the Maryland border. Georgia Ave is one of our, you know, our busiest bus routes. It's got over 20,000 people ride these buses every single day. And so we really want to try to focus on making this a strong transit corridor. That also includes looking at bus bulb outs at a lot of different locations on the corridor, as well as more of those pedestrian islands. And in general, trying to find ways to reduce vehicle speeds and volumes on the corridor just to make it a little safer to cross the street. If you're familiar with Georgia Ave, you know, speeds get pretty fast. There's a lot of volume on that street. And so just finding ways to make it a little more comfortable for everyone using it, including drivers, is a lot of what we're trying to do with this project. And one of the big features you'll see is I have a photo here of an offset bus lane on H Street, where what that means is we still have parking at the curb or loading at the curb, whatever the curbside regulation is, with a bus lane in one of the lanes next to it. And so that's kind of the big feature on Georgia Ave. And I think with that, that's what I had for our updates today. I'm happy to stick around and talk about whatever we want to chat about.
Yes, well, thank you, David. We're lucky that, I'm lucky that I have a vice chair who is a DC resident and who has probably ridden more DC buses and maybe other buses than anyone else on the committee. And just today, he sent us pictures related to bus stops. And in this case, also the recent snows.
Mm-hmm.
Given that, let me ask Steve if he'd like to chime in now on this subject.
Sure. Actually, Pat was before me. Would you like me to?
Absolutely, Steve. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Pat.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, the question was, you've seen the pictures, right?
Yeah.
Did you? Okay, yeah. It's a challenge with the snows, of course, and it's even more of a challenge afterwards because, you know, you have the snow turning to ice, and then we have a little more snow, and you really don't know what's underneath. And, you know, the pictures do justice to what we deal with. But who's responsible for that, for clearing? You know, it's not in front of a home. It's not in front of a business. But it needs to be cleared. So who's got that responsibility, David?
Yeah, that's something I was working on tracking down. I saw your message this afternoon, and it's kind of a patchwork of who is responsible for things, which is probably why it looks the way that it does. specifically, though, in terms of the shared stops and bus islands, that's a DDOT responsibility. And so I was asking a little bit from our snow team, you know, how we are reacting to this. And it's acknowledged, I think, at this point that we need to do a better job. As in terms of around bus stops and shelters, you know, there are different contracts that kind of guide who's responsible for clearing that area. WMATA is generally responsible if it's just a flag, right? But that, of course, doesn't necessarily connect to a sidewalk that's been cleared, right? And so, I thank you for sending the photos. I again, have been out riding the bus every day, and I understand 100% what you're saying. And so I don't have a great answer, unfortunately, for you, other than we are responsible, and we'll need to come up with a better way of doing it for when these events happen.
All right. Can I ask you a question? You're very knowledgeable about buses. This was an excellent presentation, and I don't think you had notes in front of you as you were giving it. What's your background? Are you a civil servant? Are you just a bus expert? I'm just curious because this is the second presentation in 2 months we've had from your group.
Yeah. Well, I'm a transportation planner here at DDOT. I've been at DDOT for almost 3 years now, exclusively on the bus priority team. I mean, that's I have a degree in urban planning, so that's kind of my background there. I don't know. I think I'm very fortunate to work with a lot of really great people and just get to learn a lot about what's going on. And of course, I'm using the system, so I know where there are problems. So yeah,
Okay,
thank you.
I have one more sentence. That's all. I don't want to take up too much time because time is tight. I think the Columbia Road plan, which I read, I'm incredibly impressed with the detail that goes into these projects, which you haven't given justice to. Pages and pages of work going back years. Very impressive. But I think it's instructive in that if the width of a street can be such that it may just not be feasible to have as many lanes, including bicycles and bus priority lanes, as possible. And I think Columbia Road would have been a street to give consideration to. And so I think this is perhaps instructive for future projects, adding the width of a street to criterion as a criterion to make the decisions, David.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think the last thing I'd say there is I'm actually part of a team that is starting to work on before and after performance analysis on our projects. So we don't have a lot to share at this point, but I'd just say stay tuned. We definitely want to take a look at how our projects are doing and make adjustments as necessary.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We have Patrick with his hand and Philippa. Pat, go ahead.
Great, thanks, Anu. Yeah, it's a very good presentation. You actually just hit the topic that I wanted to talk about, the before and after impact of your projects, particularly on traffic. You know, I'm noting with the bulb build outs and all of that, the shared bus stops, the remote islands. It would be interesting to know, what is the impact going to be on regular street traffic? And so anything that you can share on that, I think is good. I understand part of this is trying to change behavior, which, you know, is a long-term goal. But short-term, I think it would be interesting to know what is happening to commutes for people, particularly in the cars. Are they seeing a lot of, as they're seeing their commutes double or triple in length or whatever. So the fact that you're looking at that, you're going to be assessing what the impact of your project is going to be. I think that's great. I'd love to see that data. And we'll see. Good.
I'm sure that we will absolutely share it as we have them. The one other thing I wanted to add is, you know, a lot of the challenge we're still dealing with is like coming out of COVID. I know that it's been 5 years at this point, but it just really messed with traffic patterns. And so that's just
Oh,
something
right.
as we're going through our before and after analyses, you know, some of these projects were implemented at the start of COVID or kind of in between. And so it's going to be a challenge for us to figure that out, but it's we're still going to do it. We're going to figure it out.
Good. And the other thing that was impressive to me is you said you've got 44 shared or bus island projects in the district. I didn't know you had that many. And then you've got these three other projects. So it seemed to me that you could have up to 60 by the time these other projects are in place.
Yeah,
So.
and I'll distinguish with that. There's some that are specifically shared stops or bus islands where there's a bike lane that's moving somewhere around or through the structure or through the stop. The three projects that I highlighted don't have bike lanes on them. So the bulb outs are actually just concrete curb extensions. In some cases, they might be modular, but there wouldn't be any kind of bike infrastructure through.
Bus lanes, yeah, okay. But you'll still be able with, let's say it's up to 60 projects by the time you finish that. That's still going to be a lot of data for you to be able to come back and say the impact on the car traffic given this new configuration of either shared bus stops or bike lanes or, you know, the ones with bike lanes or, you know, the bus islands or whatever. Is X on these routes, and this is what we're seeing. That'll be good data, you know, as far as I know. I've argued against them because, one, I'm old, So I don't, and two, being visually impaired, it creates a risk for that population. But it'll be interesting to see what it does for traffic, because I know that disability groups have made that argument. And so let's see what the data says going forward. Yeah. And I appreciate you collecting the data and sharing that with us. That's great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Philippa, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, good evening, everyone. Wait a minute, is my camera on? I can't tell.
No, it's off now. Now it's on. Okay.
Okay, it's on now?
It's off.
Oh, let me put it back on.
Now it's on.
Because all I'm seeing is you and that back, that presentation. Anyway, I was going to say, I think that was an excellent presentation. How I usually never comment when the subject of the floating bus stops comes up because I hate them. I think that everyone's bending over backward and spending a lot of money for a group of bikers who don't even use them. It's my experience that they still prefer to ride on the sidewalks and terrorize pedestrians, speeding up on you, speeding past you, weaving in and out of you. But my question is there any data or will there be any data to show that these floating bus stops and all this money we're spending has reduced the number of accidents or interactions between, you know, bad interactions between cars and bikes? In other words, has the number of car bike accidents dropped significantly, or is it still about the same? I don't know if you have that, but that would be something I'd be interested in knowing.
Yeah, that's a great question. It wasn't the focus of what we were looking at when we were observing these stops. A lot of what we wanted to see was the interaction between a bus rider and a bicycle, person on a bicycle. But I think that would be an interesting thing to look at as well. And I don't have that data with me tonight, but great, great idea to think about. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Philippa. Chair Calabria, and then Kelly.
David, thanks. I should have mentioned upon introducing my vice chair, Steve, that Steve and I early on were pressing for bike speed bumps. It gets also to what was just said about bikers. They not only ride their bikes on sidewalks, but even when they're in the bike lanes, they ride very quickly. And I'll add that some of the bike lanes have places for bikes going forward and or to the right and to the left. And these bike lanes are paired together, which means that the bike lane is wider, but also for people with disabilities, whether it be sight or maybe some other physical disabilities, like being able to turn your head quickly right or to the left, that's really tough to deal with bikers who are coming both ways at the same time in the same lanes. I don't know if there's any solution to that, but as a transportation planner, I hope you'll keep in mind that when you have these twin bike lanes together and one side is coming right and one side is coming left, that those of us who have difficulties, physical difficulties to move our heads one way and then have to quickly move the other way to make sure that the way is clear. Please keep that kind of thing in mind. I don't know what any solution is, but your transportation planner, think about it. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Calabria. Kelly, go ahead.
Yes. I was curious of two things. I know that there's been, you know, litigation filed by the DC CIL related to some of the orchestration of the bus lanes. And I'm wondering what all you all have done to kind of assess that situation. My second question along the lines of that is how ADA parking was affected by the development plans that you've described today.
So I'm actually not familiar with the first one that you were talking about. Do you have, can you tell me more about it?
Well, back in 2022, the DC SIL, like along with a couple of, like I think the Civic Association had filed a lawsuit about the bike lanes creating barriers for individuals with disabilities. And of course, a lot of now with the floating bus stops, there's an intersection between bike lanes and buses. So that was my question, which it sounds like you may not be the best person to direct that to. But if you have any comments related to how you all have considered ADA and accessible parking while making these new plans, I would be interested in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a lot of good answers. The first time I heard bus lanes with a lawsuit, so I was confused by that. And I see now it was about bike lanes. So I'm not super familiar with that. Our bus priority team, when we work on our projects, we're really at this point guided by what was on Move DC for where bike infrastructure is at. And we work with our bikeways team, to try to make sure that we're meeting standards for whatever bike infrastructure is there. So I don't have a lot to say. I'm just not super familiar with the first issue. In terms of accessible parking on corridors, a lot of our bus projects, at this point, we've retained a lot of parking. I'm trying to think right now. Most of our corridors, bus lanes have certain hours of the day. And so that bus lane usually reverts into parking at some point. We're starting to get to a point now where that changes a little bit. And, how we're going to work with our projects from there is obviously kind of working with whatever community that we're in, whatever part of the corridor we're in, to try to make sure we're matching the context that's there. And a lot of times, like the projects that I showed tonight, we obviously didn't get into like specific curbside regulations, but along H Street Northeast, for example, parking is retained along that whole corridor. We're really not changing what that curbside parking looks like. But we could be changing some of the regulations along there to try to help with more turnover, or if we need to be doing more accessible accommodation parking, that could be something that's put into the project. And so that's something that I think we look at as we're doing these different projects is, what is the specific context in the place that we're at? You're not the first person who's brought that up. But at this point, I'm just trying to think. I don't think there's any place where there's not parking. But
so I'll give you an example. I know in LA, when LA was looking at this issue of bike lanes and having to adjust its bus and building in like bus islands or floating bus stops, whatever the terminology you want to do, that also was bringing in an element of moving parking from curbside to the middle of the street without kind of reassigning designated accessible spaces. What I think I'm hearing you say is that's not come up in the DC planning at this point.
Not that I can think of, not at this point. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kelly, for your question, and David for responding all the questions. Chair Calabi, at this point, we don't have any additional hands up by the AAC members.
Okay. Well, one last thing, David. I mentioned that Steve and I had been pressing for speed bumps, and we're pleased that some of the bike lanes now do have speed bumps. In DC, what will be the percentage of bike lanes that have speed bumps? And I think they're most important for those bike lanes which go two ways, people going to the right and people coming from the left at the same time. Will you be putting speed bumps in at least the two-lane bike lanes or what?
I'm also not the best person for that question, but I can talk to our bikeways team and get back to this group.
Oh, good, please. But you do know that some of your bike lanes do have speed bumps now.
Fine. Yeah, and you know, I'm thinking specifically around our shared stops. A lot of what we try to do is provide some kind of, you know, visual change to a person on a bike to say, you know, it's usually like a ramp into one of these, one of our shared stops, so that it's like you can actually feel something changing. There's usually some rumble strips that are there, you know, something to help slow down bikes as they're entering these spaces. But I can't tell you the percentage of speed bumps right now on bike lanes. I'd have to get back to you on that.
Okay, please do get back to us. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, everyone, for having me again.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, David. And yes, we'll, you know, look forward to hearing from you as there are any updates. And for any updates or any follow-up, please let me know and I'll be happy to share with the AAC.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so Chair Kalabi, at this point, we are ready for our next topic, which is the customer experience improvements. And Teddy Kralik is here. So Teddy, it's all yours.
Thanks, Anu. How's everybody doing? It's a great presentation by David, also a fellow city planner here, so hopefully I'll be able to do as well. I'm representing Metro's customer experience department, and I'm going to be providing some projects that we are currently working on, and we would love to hear from this group about things that are, you think, good, things that you think could be improved, and how we can make sure those are incorporated going forward. Anu, would you like me to share a screen? Is that the best way to do it? Because I'm prepared if that's the best.
You can if you like. If you'd like me to do it, I can do that. So it's your preference.
Sure. Why don't you share it then?
Okay. Give me 1 second.
And I also want to let the group know that I've provided this presentation to Anu with full alternate text descriptions for each of the images. There's quite a few photos that I'm sharing here to give some idea of what we're talking about. And this is something that was important to me to be able to provide, again, these alternate text descriptions. I'm going to do my best to also provide visual, oral descriptions. So I will try to be describing what we're showing here too, so everybody can follow.
And just for everyone's reminder, this presentation was shared with the committee. Teddy, can you just confirm if you see the presentation?
I can see it. Great. Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, so let's move to the first project, which is Fair Machine Graphics. We can go to slide 3. So folks should probably be familiar with how the current fare machines look in the Metro Rail system. And you can see here on the left that there is a picture actually at the L'Enfant station. I took this right next to Metro headquarters. At the top, there's a how to pay strip of text. Below that, there is information for how much it costs the fares to go to every other station in the system. Below that, there's a series of steps to purchase, to add more fare to your current Smart Trip card and also to get a new one. And in this case, we were approached by actually a graduate student at University of Maryland with some ideas this summer for how we could do a better job of providing instructions and generally using the space that we have on these machines to help people accomplish their goals. Unfortunately, we cannot adjust what is shown on the digital displays. And that, of course, is one of the most important interactions that people do have with this machine. So I'm sorry that we can't work on those for now. That doesn't mean that in the future, when we have better new machines, that we should be able to do a better job. But right now, what we're looking at is specifically the static graphics that we're showing overlaid on top of the machine. And so what you can see on the right side of the slide right now is a proposed design that we are still working on, where we've rearranged some of the organization of the content to try to simplify things a little bit. We've tried to also add more prominent information about how you can actually skip this machine entirely and use your phone to add Smart Trip to your wallet. That's really the simplest and easiest way to accomplish these tasks. But we also recognize that looking at it here in this kind of abstract form is very difficult to actually get a sense of how this would work. And so what we'd like to do next is actually invite this group to join us at a real live station. Right now, we're looking at doing this at L'Enfant, where we would actually install a pilot version of this new graphic, and we put it over top of a current machine, just one, so not the whole array, but just one. And then we'd have you actually come and check it out. Tell us how the color contrasts look, how the braille is working, how the raised type is performing. And from there, we'd be able to use those feedback pieces to improve more installations. We'd be looking to do a second pilot, potentially at Navy Yard, and then even a third one entirely in Spanish at Columbia Heights. So these, again, would just represent a few stations and a few machines that we'd be making these improvements on. We're not going to be able to carry this to all 98 stations. We're not going to be able to do this at every machine. It's very time intensive to print and then cut out and install. But I think that this is still a valuable exercise for us to take a good idea that came from customers and then be able to actually show that we can respond and then iterate and improve upon initial ideas to get to a place where it is working better and then apply those ideas going forward, because there will be future opportunities when we have newer machines to incorporate these lessons to make sure that we're providing the easiest, most accessible experience for people who are trying to enter our system. So this is really kind of a preview to let you guys know that we're inviting you, and we're going to set up a time at some point, hopefully soon. We've not actually completed the installation yet. We're still working on the kind of the coordination and background pieces. But once it's up, we would like to set up a time and look forward to doing a tour. I know we've done similar tours with AAC members at L'Enfant, evaluating the wayfinding signage. We recently did a visit, I know, to the sign shop to check out how the new Braille printer works. I think this is a great way for AAC members to be a part of an ongoing and really live project, which is in formation still. So this is, again, the first of three projects that I want to share with you guys. I see that Philip's got his hand raised.
Yes. Again, I know I'm looking at a picture, but it took me a while to see step two, which is in powder blue with a powder blue too. And I think hopefully that will be like the old machine, where two will be as large and easy to see as the three. Also, looking at the size of the font on the fares, again, the big question that I have for people with low vision, will there be vocal instructions available?
So we will not be adjusting, again, any of the actual kind of digital capacities of the machine. So the audio and the kind of actual like on-screen display, we're not going to be touching. This is just looking at the instructions for how to use the existing machine. I know that's frustrating because it's not enough. It's not fixing all the things that aren't working great. But we are trying to, again, learn from this so that we can make improvements going forward. And I think to your point, this is a great example where when we're actually at the station, we can really get a good sense of how, for example, select purchase is standing out or not, how the actual raised print is working. So these are great questions, and we're looking to learn from that.
Yes, that's super. And the big thing on raised print is to make sure there's enough space for somebody with a big fat finger.
That's what we'll
on one line instead of not which line they're looking at. I have
been. And I think, you know, you can get it. Again, only a partial sense, because it really is difficult in this environment. But generally speaking, you can see that we've removed basically extra text. We've tried to simplify it. We've tried to also make it a little bit more streamlined in terms of where the steps are. So we're going to see if that works. We're also going to be able to do some interesting evaluation where we'll be actually doing some testing before and after with the station managers to get a sense of whether it reduces burden on them. So for example, if they're getting more or less questions as a result of this new design. So we are going to be looking to learn again throughout the process.
Thank you.
Hey, I see Tino and Sandy are got the raised hands.
Yes. Teddy, got used to the way boxing when you're at a deal or purchasing a card, But I must admit, the first time, and I don't know how far back, when I approached the machine, it said, purchase a card, but I already had a card. I have since learned that, you know, I can still add money, even though it doesn't say that in the three lines of text. But it could be that visitors and maybe even other users of our metro system get confounded when they see not add money, but, you know, purchase a card, especially for people who already have a card. Can you comment?
Absolutely. I think we'd be looking to get feedback from all users, but especially new visitors are a great test audience because they're folks who are going to need the most assistance, or one of the groups that needs the most assistance.
So do you think something could be done so that it's clear you could to add money?
So again, it's a little hard right now in this slide, but if you zoom in, we do have actually more explicit information about that. So that is a part of it. It's just hard to see right now.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Yeah, looking forward to sharing more updates with you soon. Hey, Sandy.
Okay, this is Sandy. I, like Tino, so I have a card so I can ride for free, although it expired and I had to pay for cards. Anyway, I became aware recently of trying to use the machine with low vision. And so it was like I was a new user and I was rather confounded by the old machines. So one of the improvements that you have with this new layout is the 1, 2, 3, 4 down the left side, because I found it hard to find what do I do first, what do I do second. But like Phil Posner said, it appears that the text for the fares may be too small to read easily. I actually used my phone, took a picture and zoomed in to see what the fare was, which is a little clunky. So if it's possible to have it bigger, that would be bigger, great. And again, on this presentation, I can't tell the how good the color contrast is. So I'm really looking forward to coming down to the L'Enfant Plaza and checking it out in person and giving comments. So thank you for this opportunity. Whenever.
Yeah, that's service. That'd be great. I've always enjoyed being on tours with you previously, Sandy. To answer your question, I think about the fares, it's really challenging. You can see that we really are limited in terms of the real estate that we have. And there's a lot of information to provide. I think that it's been interesting looking at how some other agencies have handled the similar challenge, where honestly, they use a different surface entirely to provide information about fares. They don't actually put it on the machine itself, but have a side panel of sorts, recognizing that it's really challenging to do it all in the same place. So that may end up being what we need to do, but for now we're trying to keep it on the machine itself.
Okay.
Great. Well, so we'll be in touch with more information when we're actually able to announce that we've got a pilot up at L'Enfant. We're hoping that's going to be sometime this month, and then we'll arrange a time to bring folks over. So let's keep on moving on it.
Well, thank you.
Yep. And here you can see, this is a picture that I took of one of our Metro designers with the sign shop folks, who some of you have already met on the last tour, where we're really testing out the different cutout pieces. It takes hands, real artisanal skills to be able to make this work. This is not a machine, automatically produced effort. So it takes a lot of really highly skilled folks to be able to even attempt this. So let's move on to the next slide and get on to the next project. So BBNR is a short, I just didn't want to fill too much text with a Better Bus Network Redesign. That is, of course, Metro's bus network that's going to be launching this summer. And there's going to be a lot of information that we need to be able to share across all sorts of different media. There's going to be stuff online. There's going to be stuff on TV. There's going to be stuff at the bus stop. And I'm going to share today examples of what we're looking to do both at the top of the bus stop, so the bus stop flag, and a little bit lower down, closer to eye level, where we'll be putting up more temporary information to inform people about how they can find out where the new routes are going, how their existing trips are going to be affected, and to really try to raise awareness that this major redesign is occurring. So to start, I wanted to share here on this first slide some precedent images of how Metro has shared information about bus detours, service changes, general disruptions at bus stops using temporary 11x17 signage. These are all examples from the past year. There is one from the Capitol Pride Festival in June. I've got one from July 4th. We've got one from the most recent service change that happened on December 15th with changes to the 33. I've got an example from the NATO summit. And if you look closely, they're all similar, but also different. In some cases, they've got a QR code in one location. In some cases, they don't. In some cases, they have an icon with a bus image and then a slash through it. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes there's contact information in the center of the bottom of the flyer. Sometimes it's in the bottom left or the bottom right. This is not to say that, again, we figured this thing out. It's to show that there's a lot of variability right now. And so going forward, what can we learn from these efforts as well as from other agencies? So let's move on to the next slide, where I'm going to show a few examples from how other agencies have approached similar kinds of at bus stop information displays. These are all examples from Vancouver and TransLink, where you can see they have a very consistent template. They have a top section with dark, very dark blue or black with white text on it saying changes are coming to the stop or bus stop permanently removed. Also with an effective date starting Monday, January 17th, starting Monday, July 5th. They then have a short text sentence in the case in the middle. They say, we're removing this bus stop and others along this route to provide faster and more reliable service. The nearest stop is two blocks away. And then they provide a map and a QR code, a very large size. And then there's contact information just below. These are really interesting. In some ways, these are probably better and more informative than what we can do right now, mostly because the scale of the project that we're looking to support with the Better Bus Network is going to be close to 9,000 bus stops happening all at once. And so while these kinds of Vancouver examples are probably better suited for, again, individual routes or a specific stop that's happening one at a time, we're not probably going to be able to do this level of information for every stop in our network just yet. That doesn't mean it can't be a goal going forward, but for the purposes of Better Bus, I don't think we're going to be able to include this map. However, there are other elements here which are really excellent that we are going to try to see if we can carry forward. I see already there's a few hands up. I do have a few more pictures. So if it's okay, I'm going to go through and show just a few more, and then we'll come back and have a discussion about what you guys liked about some of these precedents, as well as some of the examples that we are now got draft concepts for to have something that you can respond to. So if it's okay, we're going to go to the next slide, unless Anu, you want to handle questions with each slide.
You can complete your presentation, then we can take the question.
Okay, great. Sure. So, this next example is from Boston. And here again, it's a similar situation where they're doing kind of a limited service change. In this case, they're doing the 52, the 57, and the 504 that's shown up top in a yellow background, kind of ovals with black text and a hazard icon in the left-hand corner with a black exclamation point inside. There's a QR code in the top right corner, and there's a headline that says service change starting March 11th, 2024, this stop will be moved. And then again, a short text that says routes 52, 57, and 504 will board at a new bus stop on Water Street. In the example in the center, they do show a map. In the example on the left-hand side, it's following a similar kind of format, but it does not actually show a map. And then on the picture on the right, I just wanted to include, this a little bit harder to make out exactly, but the real purpose was that you can actually make out, if you look really closely, that on the bottom of it, they are providing additional languages, Title VI Compliance Act, where they're showing, again, if you need to request more information, additional languages, here's how you can do it. This Boston example also has a bright yellow border that goes around the entire sign and calls attention to this alert. So again, we've looked at Vancouver, looked at Boston, Now I want to show you how we've, well, actually, I guess at this point, why don't we take some, just a few minutes to talk about what people liked about Vancouver and Boston and what you didn't like potentially. I see Sarah's hand is still raised.
Sarah, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate these. I don't take the bus a lot, but I do have friends and family members that take the bus a lot. And one thing I have noted, heard a couple times in recent days about specifically about Metro buses is getting to a stop, seeing that the stop is closed, and then but not saying where the nearest stop is. So I particularly like the example from Vancouver where it gives you a map saying, okay, if you're here now and you're trying to find a bus, where do I go? Instead of having to like figure that all out. As a person who's visually impaired, the yellow doesn't do much for me. It's not enough contrast, but I do appreciate the call out. I really also like the consistency that we saw in Vancouver, as you were pointing out, with the banner at the top, that's, you know, good high contrast to the, I find, for me personally, I find that the white lettering on a dark background is probably the most visually easy to read. Anyway, that's my thoughts, quickly.
Thanks, Sarah. Anybody else want to comment on Boston or Vancouver? And then we'll actually show you some initial ideas that we're still working on for how we could do this here at Metro.
Seems like we can move on, Teddy.
Okay, great. So these are two examples using the same general template, but a few kind of design tweaks between the version on the left and the version on the right. The version on the left is using red headline text to say all bus routes are changing. It says service alert in the top left corner. It has a red hazard icon with a white exclamation point in the top right corner and a black bus icon next to it in the top right corner. On the example on the right, it's similar, but it's in blue and it has just a bus icon in the top left corner and a big exclamation point in a circle in the kind of right margin space. As you continue with the text under the big headline, all bus routes are changing, then in bold black text, again, this is all in white background, it says starting June 29, 2025. And then below that in kind of normal, not heavy bold text, it says new routes with new destinations will provide more reliable service across the region. Immediately under that, it repeats the exact same information with the same headline and bold hierarchy, but in Spanish. And then below that, there is an entire section with a QR code with an enlarged text for the WMATA.com/betterbus website, as well as the 202 Go Metro customer call center number. There's a Metro logo in the bottom right corner, and there is text at the top saying, learn how this impacts you in both English and Spanish. So you can see how there are certain elements that we've incorporated from those Boston and Vancouver examples. We've also tried to, again, update it for Metro. This is something that, again, we are still collecting feedback on across all of our internal teams. So you guys are a part of this process. I think that there are some things that are clearly working. I think there's some things that we're still working on. Are there any immediate pieces of feedback? I see, Sandy, you've got your hands up.
Okay, this is Sandy. So I sort of mesh the two of these. I would make the service alert words on at the top left, I would make them larger. On the right-hand side, they would fit beside the bus. And the very large exclamation mark to draw your attention is great, but you know, I don't know whether that needs to be inside of a triangle. I think this is great for a really quick fix. If people can use a QR code to figure out where they need to go or the details of how it's changed. And I get it that doing 9,000 bus routes and goodness knows how many bazillion signs you need to put up. I get the QR code as a quick fix, but I kind of wish there could be a little bit more information that you didn't have to pull out a smartphone and scan a QR code. That's it.
And again, Sandy, those are great points. I do want to remind you, this is not the only place, hopefully, where you're going to encounter announcements about Better Bus. This is part of a much larger communications plan that will be across all sorts of different ways to find out. There will be ambassadors out talking about it. There will be presentations. There will be media hits. So this is just what you'd be finding at a bus stop. And again, we'll continue with the comments, but just briefly on, if we can move one slide ahead. This is a rendering of, again, how the new temporary bus flag draft that we're working on, and we'll get into how that actually is set up in the next slide after this, but just to see how the, we'll stay here for a second, Anu, just to see how this would be complementing. There'd be two pieces here at every stop. There'd be this kind of temporary supplemental information at eye level. There would be an actual bus flag at the top with the route information, destinations. We're going to get into how that represents some real improvements on the current flag. But for now, we're just looking again at the temporary supplemental information that's closer to eye level. So it looks like Steve's got his hand up.
Oh. Is it my turn?
Go ahead, Steve.
It is your turn. You're on.
Oh, okay. I didn't. Not sure. The QR code. The QR code is great, but it's problematic for people who either don't know how to use it or don't have the phones to use it. A good example is the removal of the seat, the row of seats in buses, in order to accommodate strollers. I don't know whether you've seen some of the buses.
I have.
But I have yet to see a stroller there on any of the buses. And the reason why is it's a little dangerous to push a stroller with a little child through the bus to get into that narrow space. And the child, and if the bus stops quickly, that stroller rocks one way or the other. So I have never seen a stroller there. There's a QR code, but no phone number or nothing else for somebody to comment. And the QR code is on a moving bus, and I do my best. But as you're working with QR codes, as Sandy mentioned, you might want to take that into consideration. And I also, I like the Boston much better than, I like the Boston a lot because the font is large. The information is laser, and they use colors effectively. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Those are great points. And yeah, absolutely. I think with the QR code, there are going to be some folks who use it, some folks who don't. I will say that one of the neat things about QR codes is that it allows you to track how many times it's actually been scanned. And when we did some of the QR code evaluation from the summer, from some of the precedents, like, for example, the NATO summit that happened this summer, some of those were getting scanned like 1,000 times. So people absolutely are using them. It's just one way across many different outlets and many different ways to get in touch with Metro. Philip, I see your hands raised.
Yes, it's just to confirm something that we've said many times before. For the lower postings on the flags, putting them in the middle of a jungle like that one, there's no way to get close enough to it with a walker or a wheelchair or a scooter in order to take a picture of that QR code, let alone actually read the small print that's on the sign. Location.
Yeah, and again, you're absolutely right. This is obviously a kind of a rendering. This is not even real. But this is also typical, right? We know that there are going to be examples where there's going to be bus stop posts that are set into tree boxes like this. And it's going to be sometimes difficult to get really close. I will say that one difference between seeing this in the rendering versus in real life is that this actually is a really large sign. It's 11 by 17. So it's bigger than it kind of seems right now from this perspective. But you're absolutely right. It's not going to work everywhere every time. And that's why we have to have a lot of different ways to reach people. This is just one.
Thank you.
Tino.
Yes, I do like the sign that you're showing at the moment. I'm not sure how many of our low vision people people use, or people who are deaf use Braille. What is Braille being considered as for adaptation in these signs?
We will likely not be able to print again, 9,000 or so pieces in Braille for this, but going forward, this is a temporary signage that we're putting up. The hope is that this is getting us to the Better Bus launch in the summer, but that it still opens the opportunity for us to create entirely new bus signage going forward that would potentially also include regional transit providers in addition to Metro. And there we are looking at opportunities to include Braille and raised lettering at eye level, so closer again down the post. So that is something we are looking at in the future. For this, however, there would likely not be a Braille installation.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. I've got some more to show here, so let's keep moving on, if that's okay. I want to zoom in exactly at the top of that flag that we're showing. And this is something that I think is really a great example of an improvement over the current design. And this is showing what we're thinking about for a bus stop where one route stops at this bus stop. We estimate that that's about 70% of all stops are like this. However, as you guys know, currently, it doesn't matter how many routes you're stopping at a particular stop, it's always the same treatment in terms of how the text is shown. Here, we're trying to take advantage of the space that we have on the existing flags to make it as large as possible. So in this case, the D40 here is 4 inches tall. That is double the current 2 inches height of how we're showing route IDs on the current flags. Everything, again, on this flag is larger than what is on the current. If it's not larger, it's very similar. So for example, like the stop ID number is very, very similar. This is, again, just for one route. I also want to show what it looks like here on the 4 route. So you can see it is a little bit smaller. In this case, again, all the text is still this D20, D72, showing the new route IDs. These are all 2 inches tall, so it's the same as what's on our current flag. So again, just as good. We're also perhaps going to be trying a icon approach where we're going to be showing in DC at least which of the routes are 24 hours. This is something that happens in DC only, but you can see we've got a circle next to D20. It's a white circle with red text on it that says 24 HR. And then it shows actually a destination to the right, Gallery Place. That's also something that's totally new compared to our flag. There is, of course, this kind of complicated comprehension challenge, which is that there are current routes that are running right now, the 33, the 36, the G8, the 11Y, again, this hypothetical sign. And there would be potentially 4 routes. Again, this is just an example. This is not a specific case. Going forward, starting on June 29th, there would be this whole new set of, again, better bus routes. This is, again, a little bit hard to grasp immediately, which is why it's important to have that supplemental information lower down, saying to folks very clearly, everything is changing. Go here to find out more information about how you can look up, get your route. But we are trying to convey a fair amount of information here on the existing bus flag. So it's no bigger, no smaller than what we've got right now. If we can continue on. As I said, actually, this is the current bus flag. And so again, this is a little bit hard to see, so I'll read out to folks, but that C8, that route ID is 2 inches tall. The phone number is just under 3/4 of an inch tall. The stop ID number is about exactly 1 inch. So going forward, we're really able to maintain just about the same heights, if not better in some cases. So we are trying to do our best there. If you go to the next slide, Anu, we've also done some initial color contrast analysis to show that we are maintaining the same contrast of route names, but we actually are improving the contact information, the stop ID, and you can see why. It's because we're using that white background. And so it's dark text on white background, which we know, again, is the easiest way to find critical information like the bus stop ID number as well as the phone. If we go to the next slide, this is a picture of a prototype. So we actually took a full length bus stop post. We attached this design prototype of the flag just to see kind of what it would actually look like. The person who's standing under it is the designer who helped make this happen. And we're standing outside of Metro's HQ at L'Enfant just to get a sense of kind of how big these things actually are. That wraps up the presentation. We've covered a lot so far. We've covered the fare machines. We've covered the temporary eye level information. We've looked at the top of the bus stop with the flag. So there's been a lot. But I want to make sure that we also stay on time. So Anu, how much time do we have left?
Less than a minute.
Less than a minute. Okay, Tina, you got the last word.
Yeah. Isn't that last sign a little too high?
That's actually how, well, so that's a great question, right? From ADA regulations, it needs to be at least 8 feet above, right? The actual sidewalk to have that clearance. And it looks really big there, but that is actually how tall signs are generally across the area. I know that's kind of surprising. We took it actually and stood it up next to just a current sign that's right in front of the metro station there, and it matched it almost exactly. So that actually is how it is.
Anu, by contract, are we required to end at 6 o'clock?
We are at 6 at this point, yes.
All right. Unfortunately, thanks, Teddy. But unfortunately, this meeting, by contract, we have to end it. Thank you all.
Thank you, Teddy, for your great presentation. And thank you, everyone. We will have our next week, our Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. So see you then. Thank you.